The Attack Zone, episode 13, 12-pack. Hello, Dice fans. You have stepped again into the Attack Zone. We are bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we're bringing you topics that we choose to put forward so that we can share our strengths for one another's improvement and also bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn to address them. I'm Dave, and joining me this week once again is actual mad scientist JT. What is up today, JT?
The sky is blue, the grass is green.
Another beautiful fall day, I'll tell you that.
Man, it was awesome.
Yeah, I know you had a long day, but I hope you had the chance to appreciate that at least a little bit.
Got outside a little bit, that's true. Yep.
Like, more than just walking, like, to your car?
No, but I did a lot of driving for work today.
Yeah.
Probably almost 60 miles, to be honest, so...
My goodness, that was my Friday last week. I had a workshop to go to, and then I had to go back to the office, and the workshop was not close. But getting paid for mileage rocks, so there is that.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, before we move into today's feature, I'd like to remind everyone, if you like the show, please give us a review on iTunes and now Google Play as well. We're listed on their podcast directory, as we mentioned the last couple of episodes. Reviews are going to help others find it. We don't advertise at all. This is all word of mouth, and we'd love to give you props for a review here. So, we do have a new review since the last time. Tree Druid left some kind words, so thank you, Mr. Tree Druid, or Mrs. Tree Druid, or Ms., whichever, any of those, even others. We appreciate the kind words on there, and thanks for giving the review. We'd love to shout you out, too, so give us a review. Talk back. We want to know what you think. And we'll hopefully have a few more of those to talk about in the coming weeks. All right, so with that out of the way, we have our special treat today. That is 2 6-packs, one for Faerun Under Siege, and the other for Green Arrow Flash. And there's a reason we're doing 2 6-packs. We want to take this chance to announce the Attack Zone Patreon. So patreon.com/theattackzone. Now, JT, I don't know, were you familiar with Patreon before I started talking to you and Randy about this?
No, sir. Never seen one, never heard about it before, actually.
Oh, cool. Okay, so Patreon is a site that allows users to essentially subscribe to content creators. Now, don't worry, we're not going behind any kind of a paywall. All content will always be available to everyone. So let me get that out of the way right now. You're never going to be missing any Attack Zone content because we have a Patreon. And in fact, we're not even trying to make any money at all off of this. We really just want to make the 6-pack sustainable and also through that reward you, the listener. So the first reward that we're going to kick off with is this. Our subscribers will be entered into a monthly drawing to get any foils, rares, and super rares that we pull on our 6-packs. And that's generally going to be 2 6-packs per month. And I mean our Patreon subscribers. So the details of this is as follows. We have a funding goal of $18 per month. The reason for 18 is that that just about covers the cost of 2 episodes worth of packs, plus shipping the prizes, and of course Patreon's 5% cut that they're going to take anyway. Every subscriber who backs us for $1 a month, they'll have one chance in our drawing, essentially one entry. And then if they do $3 per month, they'll have 5 chances. So really, again, this is just to make the 6-pack sustainable. It's been a popular feature. When we stopped doing it, people wanted to know where it went. And so we'd like to make this regular. So, and then if we exceed that funding goal, we're going to talk amongst ourselves. We'll have some more ideas in the works to reward backers. But again, I got to stress, no content here will ever be limited. We just want an easy way to simultaneously keep up a popular segment and also give back to people. So please, again, check out patreon.com/theattackzone. And if you can spare $1 a month, please do. It's not something that we're going to harp on a lot. This is not your local PBS pledge drive. Though support that, too. It's a good cause. But especially after we hit the $18 a month funding goal, you won't hear more than a mention of it here or there. And we're certainly not going to club you over the head getting you to subscribe to this. So, yeah. that's what we're doing. But we have some six packs.
We do.
So let's get to that right now. JT, why don't you start us off with Battle for Faerun? Now, I know you guys are doing Faerun Under Siege.
There you go.
You guys are doing like a Rainbow Draft Wednesday, right?
Rainbow Draft Wednesday. RDW, man.
Yeah, it works. Now, you're doing a BFF, though, in yours, I believe, correct?
Yeah, so the store had to buy BFF to get the Rainbow Draft, and our local guys never really picked up too much of it, so it makes sense just for us to go ahead and draft it. The store hasn't drafted it yet. We've drafted Faerun Under Siege. So we're drafting Battle for Faerun, but picked up some Faerun Under Siege for this segment. So
yeah, we've certainly heard of people who are drafting either or both of those sets for various things connected with this event. So let's get it kicked off, JT, with some commons.
Okay.
What do you got?
In no particular order, the Half-Elf Bard Lesser Emerald Enclave. The ability on this 4-cost shield, good aligned character is Experience. While Half-Elf Bard is active, when one of your good characters is KO'd, you may remove an experience token from Half-Elf Bard to return that character to the field zone at its current level. Feeling
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so it's a bard.
It's a bard.
It's a bard, certainly. You're certainly going to have experience tokens on any of these adventurers. And being able to manage a knockout, if you have good characters, is not a bad thing. However, it is only good characters, and you have to have experience on this. So it's something I take later. I don't think this is an early pick by any means, but I do think that this is a card that, if you find late in the draft, if you find yourself with a lot of good, or maybe even mid-draft, playable good characters, you might want to consider taking this card.
Yeah, even then, I really don't... I don't see it. I mean, because the stats are so-so, right? So you're going to have to find a way to get experience on them at a 4-cost. There are other good characters that I think are probably worthwhile. So... there is that tie-in, but all of the thieves are good. I think at least the uncommon dwarf wizard is good. I think probably the human fighters are good. So, there are good characters, but by the time you've got them, you might be set up to try and get your win condition in the field and go. So
that's fair. Though I would point out that a lot of the less expensive, monsters have health in the ones and twos on most of their faces, so enough that he could deal with it on any of their faces. Plus, they just have to be knocked out with him out on your turn. It doesn't necessarily have to be him doing the knocking.
Yeah, I don't think I would, because he's a starter character, so there's not going to be that many dice to pick up for him. I probably am not interested.
Certainly not early. I would consider him a mid-pick. If he wheels and I have a lot of good, especially in my second pack, I would consider it. But that's a lot of ifs on that, so it's not like a ringing endorsement on my end either.
Yep.
All right, what's next?
Human Fighter, Lesser Emerald Enclave. Good aligned 3-cost fist, equipable character. Experience. While Human Fighter is active, gear dice cost 1 less to purchase, minimum 1.
So this is one of those times where I think you have to look out and read the rainbow and say, how many gear dice do we have out there?
Yeah, and I mean, gear was probably heavier in Battle for Faerun. So if you're doing a mixed draft, then maybe you look for that magic helmet, magic sword.
Only going to have ring in here. Yeah.
Well, ring, the robe, the basic actions. There are options. Stat wise, 0-2-1, 0-2-2, 1-3-3. He's a cheap character, so Oddball would be on because he's a cheap character. Experience can add up.
It sure can.
And so You know, maybe it's worth looking at least picking up the cheap die.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if we're talking early picks, I would take it before I would take the Bard. So very, very early leader in the clubhouse. But yeah, nothing wrong with a cheap die that's easy to field.
Yep. Glabrezu, Lesser Fiend, 5-cost, Evil Mask. Gate Glabrezu. When fielded, you may take another unpurchased Glabrezu die and roll it. If it rolls a character face, put it in your prep area. Otherwise, return it to its card.
Boy, these fiends can be fun if you can chain them. But I think they work the best when you can mix sets, don't they?
Yeah, probably, but the only fiend in the first set is Pit Fiend, so...
Yeah, but he just adds so much. What Pit Fiend does for fiends is, I think, a lot of the stuff that makes fiend work.
I
like this. I just probably want Hellhound maybe first.
Maybe, but... You know, because Glabrezu gates himself, like, as long as you can pick up a couple, you know, it's like a big character's version of Swarm.
Oh, it's true.
So, I like it.
Yeah, there's some powerful things that you can get out there, for sure. Yeah, I like it. I still don't know that it's something I would take early, but his stats aren't bad at all.
Yeah, 1-3-3, 2-4-4, 2-5-6.
Right. So, I mean, he, just for sheer numbers, but combat stats alone aren't going to win you anything. So, he's not a bomb.
No.
He just has good stats.
And really, he's only good if you can get a bunch of them. So.
Right.
I would say you need to be able to pick up 3 for him to be worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have just 1 die, that's not going to work so well. And. Boy, he's a starter character as well, so that's not going to be too likely.
Yep. Okay. Flesh Golem, Lesser Construct, 4-cost, Neutral Shield. Fabricate 2-3. You may KO 2 character dice with total purchase cost 3 or more to purchase this die for free. While Flesh Golem is active, you may redirect 1 damage from you to this character die each turn.
I love all of the golems, so I'm inclined to want to take him. I like him probably better than most of what we've seen so far. For one, the knocking out is a way to get something with a great one fielded off the board so you can get it back on. Maybe also get a stuck sidekick out of there. Obviously, better the more flesh golem dice that you have. And none of the golems have terrible stats either. Decent defensively and decent attack on their level 3 phases. So I like flesh golem.
Yep, fielding cost is a little bit painful, but beyond that, he's 1-2-2 fielding, but beyond that, I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, there are some wind fielded effects that you can cycle and maybe be useful, so...
No question, in this set especially. You know, that's something in general that I think people overlook a lot with the golems, also in Unlimited, is that fielding cost. If you don't have a plan... It's nice to have that on-demand knockout and it's not available to your opponent, like Blue Eyes White Dragon might be. But at the same time, people don't always have a plan for what to do with that die once it's cycling through, and they end up with the same problem of overpurchasing that a lot of players can be plagued by.
Yep. Totally agree.
Yep.
Next up, Elf Thief, Lesser Harper. 2-cost, good mask, equipable. If you have energy in your reserve pool, you may field Elf Thief for free. When Elf Thief is fielded, you may use 1 energy from your opponent's reserve pool.
Yeah, sold. I'm probably going to take this.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah,
nobody's PXGing in draft, but at the same time, people often have unused energy sitting around. In draft, something that they couldn't spend on something else. Occasionally, you'll find something for defense purposes, like Blink T or Distraction or what have you. But the energy is going to be sitting there just for other reasons. And the ease of fielding, plus the fine ramp of stats, 1-2-3, is something I'm happy with. This is a pick, for sure. Right now, the absolute leader.
Yep. Lolth. 8-cost Evil Mask, the Demon Dark Mother. While Lolth is active, you may spend 1 when you field an evil character to deal 1 damage to your opponent.
Wow, I am so glad this is in this pack. This is like my favorite card in FUS. Forget Elf Thief, right?
Nope.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I disagree. Our last common 3-cost neutral shield equipable lizard folk, lesser humanoid. Swarm. While this character is active, if you draw this die during your clear and draw step, draw and roll an extra die. NPCs can't block lizard folk.
It's not better than thief, but it's something that I would not mind picking up a little later on if I could.
Yep.
Swarmers do go fast, and he is not as great as some of the other swarmers that we've seen. But NPCs not being able to block is big. It can dictate some of what your opponent has to do if they want to block it. Or there are a lot of situations where they just might not be able to block it with anything at all. Pair that with the front line amongst your basic actions if you're using everything, and that's not too shabby. But it does not beat Elf Thief for me.
Yep, I agree. Moving into uncommons, 7-cost good bolt Bahamut, the Platinum Dragon. Breath Weapon 3. When Bahamut is fielded, KO all evil dragons. Deal 1 damage to target opponent for each dragon die KO'd this way.
Yeah. I actually liked Bahamut a lot. It was on the first team I ever drafted for the set. I did have a Bahamut on there. Generally, we don't go too hard for those 7-cost characters, but this is not bad. I prefer the Overcrushing Common just a little bit more. But in general, something with this stats and Breath Weapon 3, if you can get it out, is absolutely a door-closing kind of card. That said, because of the cost, I think you can count on a couple of these wheeling or maybe even making it to the later rounds. I think people underrate what Bahamut can do in favor of some of the faster pieces in this set. It's not the easiest thing to get out, but I think it's a worthwhile card eventually. But you are likely to be able to have it wheel on you or even pick it up late.
Yep, totally agree.
It's one of those times, you know, late in the draft, there's like, oh gosh, what am I left with? Oh, Bahamut, sweet. And it might actually make your team.
Yeah. Yeah, unlike the common wolf.
Oh, come on, it's my favorite.
Or any wolf.
yeah, really, it's bad.
Next is 3-cost good mask equipable character, Elf Thief, Greater Emerald Enclave. When fielded, move target energy die that matches the type of one of your active characters from your opponent's reserve pool to their used pile. If you do, you may move a die with the same energy from your used pile to your reserve pool on the same face.
Yeah, no, obviously not with a common in there.
Yep.
The unfortunate part of it is that you're giving somebody else an Elf Thief die, but that's just an unfortunate consequence of what you have to do.
Yep, I agree. 3-cost bolt, good equipable character, Dwarf Wizard, Greater Harper, experience. While active, when you use an action die, Dwarf Wizard gets +2 attack and +2 defense until end of turn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate the card. I think that you're likely to see some action dice used, especially with D&D. There are some nifty combinations that you can do with basic actions and also some non-basic actions that are in this set. But it's not an early pick, but it is a cheap die. It does field for not very much, but at the same time, that level 1 face is 0-2. This is not a card I could take unless I know for sure that I'm going to be relying on basic actions.
Yeah, like Shocking Grasp Ramp.
Right. So, absolutely. If that's in my plan and I think that fits well with my team, which it does fit with a lot of things, but not always, then sure, I will take this. I'm not going to take it over Elf Thief, but it's I think it's worthwhile. Again, kind of mid as you're looking for some of those lower cost characters, there are ways to use it, especially as you said, with Shocking Grasp Ramp.
So if you go Shocking Grasp and you happen to pick up a giant spider, you can ping off their sidekicks, maintaining your Shocking Grasp Ramp, and then force a low-level monster to block after you've gotten, you know, your +4/+4, and then attack with the Dwarf Wizard to force experience tokens onto your characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, geez. You know, again, I think I overlook the fact that there's the experience there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So he gets big real quick. It's actually a very good card. I won at least one draft with him. So
would you take it over Elf Thief?
No. Okay. I don't think so. It depends on how many Thief dice and how many Dwarf Wizard dice.
Okay. So if there's just like if like the only two Elf Thief dice that are out there are the ones that are in your hand,
then definitely Dwarf Wizard.
Yeah.
No, hands down. But if there's like 9 Elf Thief dice out there, I'd have to consider, you know, have to consider, because Elf Thief dice are going to go quick, right? Even the commons.
Yes.
Like, so you're going to have to pick up either the rares or the uncommons to get multiple Elf Thief dice. Dwarf Wizard dice probably don't go so quick. So if you know your play group, if you know what they're going to do, and you can predict that they're going to take the Elf Thief dice, then by all means, go the other way. Take the Dwarf Wizard and just set yourself up for some success.
Yeah, I think if we didn't have Dwarf Wizard in here, this would be the pick.
Didn't have Elf Thief, Dwarf Wizard would be the pick.
If we didn't have Elf Thief in here, this would be the pick. Yeah.
So far, for sure. Mm-hmm. Last card is also an uncommon. 3-cost Fist, good aligned, equipable character, Human Fighter, Greater Lords Alliance. Experience, while active, once during your turn, if an opposing adventurer is KO'd, add an experience token to Human Fighter immediately.
Opposing evil adventurer.
Yes.
I mean, a 3-cost, it's not better than Dwarf Wizard. And specifically, I mean, he gets experience in more ways. Off the top of my head, I'm not 100% certain how many evil adventurers there are.
I don't know, to be honest with you.
Nor am I. But I don't think there are a ton. I'm just scrolling through. I see, well, one of the rare Human Fighter. That's a promo card. That's not an adventurer. Okay, so there are not a lot of those.
there you
in
go.
In fact, I see one. Unless I'm missing something.
Is it just the rare?
The rare Human Fighter. I mean, Strahd, but he's not a draftable character. Let's see here. That's not an adventure. I just searched for experience on DM Retrobox. It's one. So that does not really give you any range whatsoever. There's no fun shenanigans to pull because of surprise popular evil adventurers, because they don't exist.
Save it for later.
Probably not a great card. Probably not.
No.
So that's the end of that pack then. No rares.
No rares.
But
no
who
supers.
Can complain?
I didn't even pull any OP cards in the packs. So.
Oh, well, no OP card. Oh, jeez. What a ripoff. Yeah. Hey, that'll happen now and again. But certainly if I got a pack in front of me with Elf Thief and that Dwarf Wizard in there, I'm not going to be disappointed that I didn't pull any rares.
Right. Either one's a good pick.
In fact, I'm happy because I'm not passing a rare to somebody by taking the common thief or the uncommon wizard.
Yes. Yes. You're now reducing your joy to simply avoiding others' joy.
Yep. All right. So that's it with that. The elf thief or the dwarf wizard. Probably elf thief if there is no thief, or if the rainbow is low on them, dwarf wizard. All right, so let's move into Green Arrow Flash. I have the cards this time, so we'll give JT first crack at the responses. And we're going to start with the commons, and interestingly, all but two of the commons are 4-cost, so that's kind of crazy how that worked out there. The first one is the non-basic action, the 4-cost Mask Shield Rip Hunter's Chalkboard. This is the one that adds all dice in your bag to your used pile. For each mask or shield character added to your used pile in this way, gain 1 life. The global pay a shield. The first die you purchase this turn is added to your prep area instead of your used pile. So a global that we like, but what do you think, JT, about this one?
Not a first pick.
No way. Nope. I think that the global is fine. A little less useful without some of the other ramp globals that we have in the world of Dice Masters that you're not going to get by drafting. Still good in this set, but not a first pick.
Yep.
Next up, the Atom for Fist, Teen Titan, Sword of the Atom. While the Atom is active, whenever you could use a global ability, you may spin down one of your The Atom dice to level 1 to deal 3 damage to target character die. Not bad removal for anything that has 3 health.
Yeah, it's very useful, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, because then after you've spun him down, he's got 1 defense. You know, depending on what basic actions you're allowed to bring, maybe you can ping him off or run him, you know, jump block with him and get him back and do it again. It's pretty useful ability. Takes some skill to play with, but not bad.
Yeah, certainly a card that. Certainly a card that's worth having on your team in this draft format. All right, next up is the 4-mask Batman family, Batgirl, Commish's daughter. While Batgirl is active, your opponent may not target your character dice with character abilities. So any character ability that targets, not going to work with Batgirl on the job.
So there's the counter to the Atom.
Yeah.
And while she doesn't have great defensive stats, she's got pretty good offensive stats for the cost and for the ability. She stops, you know, the Firestorm, a couple other abilities. She's worth thinking about for sure.
Yeah, if I don't have a bomb in my first pack, then she's a card that I'm going to think about taking. Okay. Deadshot, Villains United, a 4-bolt villain. Once per turn, when fielded, choose Villain or Suicide Squad. All dice of that affiliation cost 1 less to purchase until end of turn.
I just can't get over the fact that this is a when fielded ability. So you have mm-hmm. to probably pay to field them and then get a discount in a set that doesn't have a ton of ramp. While I like it, I just don't think you can make it work very easily.
Yeah, you're right. You're likely going to have to spend to field him. I mean, you have to pay to field him on 2 of his 3 character faces. So how much are you really saving through this? And in some instances, especially with his weak defense, you might even just be better off having rolled the 2 bolt face. I mean, if you had to field him for 2... and this is a when fielded ability, you're not necessarily gaining a whole lot other than you get something in the field. Now, that can be very important, but yeah, with his fielding cost, it's hard. If it was like 0-1-1, then sure, you could consider it being useful, but I don't think this is one that's worthwhile.
Yeah.
You're going to be happy with this one, I think, JT. We have the 4-bolt crime syndicate villain, Power Ring, Harold Jordan. When Power Ring attacks, he gets +1 attack for each opposing non-villain character die in your opponent's field zone.
I do like the Power Ring.
I know you do. You've brought me around on it. In fact, after a few episodes ago.
So, in my most recent Green Arrow and Flash draft, I actually got to draft this Power Ring and the Uncommon Gorilla Grodd. I picked up Power Ring and then I ramped to Gorilla Grodd and then just kept powering, 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 powering. You know, you can clear a field that way, so.
You sure can.
I like him.
It's a good card. That's probably the best one that we have so far. Would you agree?
Yep.
Me too. Okay, moving out of our 4-cost commons, the glut of them there, we have the 5-cost crossover die. It is a mask and shield, a Green Arrow affiliation. This is, in fact, Green Arrow himself, Robin Hood. So he has a synergy ability. While he's active, when an opposing action die targets one of your character dice, you may pay Mask Shield to choose a new target. So basically, choosing a new target for that action die.
It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I mean, pretty good stats for the cost. He's obviously very heavy attack, but I don't mind it. It's a little bit expensive for what he can do. Mm-hmm. At this point, I'm passing him and keeping with powering.
Yeah, 100% agree. Finally, we have a foil here. This is the common Katana Blade Runner, a 2-mask Justice Leaguer. While a Katana die is in your prep area, if your opponent rolls one or more question marks, wild energy, that is, you may pay one life and field one Katana die at level 1, where, incidentally, she is a 2-1 character.
I am a much bigger fan of the uncommon.
I agree with that completely. I don't know that I care about paying one life to field something that I might be able to field for free the next turn anyway. Yeah. Now, there are situations where that might depend on it, like you winning or losing the game, having that blocker. But you also have to have her in the prep area at a time when that's going to matter. Eh.
Yeah, her being in the prep area is, I think, less controllable than her being in the used pile, which is what her 100% needs. So. Yep.
Well, we're done with the commons, and let's move on to the uncommons. What do you know? 2-mask, Green Arrow Family, Katana, Crisis and Tragedy. While Katana is in your used pile, if you roll 2 question marks, wild energy, that is, you may field Katana at level 1. So there you go.
Yeah, and in that case, I like it. I just like powering more.
I do too. I would point out the distinction between the uncommon and the common here. The common, while it has its drawbacks, as we just talked about, you get to field it on your opponent's turn. Yeah. And I just want to point out that that can be useful. There are not a lot of things that can be fielded when it's not your turn. There are a couple of abilities recently we've talked about that do allow for that. But this is one, and that can be meaningful. But in this case, not better than powering.
Yep.
Next up, we have Jay Garrick, the Crimson Comet, also a foil card here. This is a 4 Bolt Shield Justice Society guy here. Cross Pulse, when you buy a Jay Garrick die, all of your character dice in the field zone gain fast until the end of turn. Of course, fast characters deal combat damage before non-fast characters. What do you think of old Jay?
So, I like him very situationally. I'm
that
growing,
sounds about
like,
right.
Fast is growing on me. But in the games where I've had a decent wall and Gorilla Grodd, I thought, man, if I had that Jay Garrick, I'd buy him right now and give everybody fast and overcrush and likely save them,
keep that wall.
He has a definite ability to speed up that strategy and win faster. Versus, not knowing how your opponent's going to block and what's he going to let through, or what dice of hers does she want to KO to get the when fielded effects back? Like, it's all you can take some of that guesswork out by giving them fast and overcrush, and it doesn't matter as much if you're able to maintain your wall.
Agreed completely. Wall savers are a good thing in the game. Still not better than Power Ring. Probably something you're going to take if you're going Gorilla Grodd.
Maybe.
You consider it. Well, it might not make your team depending on what else you draft, but I think you would consider it.
Yep.
Next up is the 4-mask Green Arrow Family character, Speedy, Mia Dearden. She also has fast. That's it, fast. And I will point out her stats, 031, 141, 251. Decent on the attack, not so much on the defense. She is certainly relying on fast to be a factor. That said, a magic missile is going to make quick work of her.
True, but in games with limited BACs, the stats for the ability and cost, I mean, she's pretty good. She gave me fits in the first draft I played.
Yeah, well, essentially a character like this is quick removal, right? I mean, she in the form of a character, but decent stats. Yeah, low defense. She's going to be knocked out, so you have to re-roll her again. But it gets rid of a lot of different things.
Well, she might not be knocked out. That's the point.
She might not be knocked out. Well, yeah, with a fast. That's true. She might not be knocked out with a fast. a fair point. But there are ways to hit her, especially with things like let's see here. I believe Common Static. The rare is the sidekick one. Common Static is anything.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Common Static could easily do some work against her and things like that. So the counters exist, but as you said, fast is making an impression. Next up, we have Uncommon Weather Wizard. This is a 4-bolt villain. When Weather Wizard is blocked by a non-crossover character die, he gets +2 attack and +2 defense until the end of turn. Yeah, not the most impressive uncommon that we've seen.
Like, unless
general, and not better than Power Ring.
Unless someone gives him Overcrush, I can still just chump block him for no effect, you know?
Well, and even if somebody gives him Overcrush, his level 1 phase isn't that great. Now, his level 2 and 3, he would go to a 5-3 and or a 6-5, which is... Oh, sorry, +2/+2. He would go to a 5-5 or a 6-7, rather, which is not too shabby. But yeah. That level 1 phase is like, ooh.
Yeah, and you know, and on the other side, if your opponent picked up the common Hal Jordan, then they're blocking him with a 2-cost character that removes his 4-cost ability.
Right, sure. Finally, at rare, we have the 4-bolt Teen Titan Static Taser Punch. Don't tase me, bro. While Static is active, whenever your opponent rolls 2 or more dice at once, knock out target sidekick unless your opponent takes 1 damage.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't particularly care for it. Yeah.
No, if I'm going to take a static, I'm going to take the common static.
Agreed.
Unless I needed the rare or thought I could trade it. The problem with the rare static is that your opponent has the option of avoidance.
Yeah.
And I don't care for that.
I agree.
So, it looks like we are saying Power Ring is the first pick in our 6-pack here. Is there anything you could see in the second in your second pack that would make you think otherwise?
I don't think so.
Nor do I.
You know, because it's just, like, he can stand alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to attack with him. You can leave him in the field. You can, you know, it's up to you. You know, you get the choice. So,
because he's decent, he has decent enough stats on his own that even if he's not attacking, you know, he's gonna hold out for a little while.
Yeah, it's not that his stats are even very good on his own. It's just that compared to other 4-cost characters in the set, like they're fine. So, and when he attacks, they get better.
The only thing I don't love with him is his fielding cost. That 1-2-2 does hurt just a little bit, but the ability works, especially if you can give him Overcrush, whether through something like Grodd, Hulk out, what have you. It's worthwhile. He can get big in a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So those are our 6-packs. We want to bring you some more, so please check out patreon.com/theattackzone. To finish out the episode, we have a backdoor pilot here. This is a peek into my side project, Dice Up Your Life. This is a semi-regular show about building a Dice Master scene. Episodes are going to release frequently on Wednesdays. I want to share ideas, both mine and yours, so that all of our locals can benefit from all of our combined knowledge. The podcast feed is going to be going up soon on both iTunes and Google Play. I just got the approval emails on today as we record this. But until then, this is the first episode in its entirety. These are going to be around 15 to 20 minutes long as a rule, because I want them to be easily digestible. I hope you enjoy Dice Up Your Life. Please subscribe to that podcast feed. We'll have links up once it's live. And thank you for listening to JT and I here on The Attack Zone.
Yay.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Cheers.
Dice Up Your Life, Episode 1. Not Enough Cooks. Hey everyone, it's Dave, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Dice Up Your Life. Woohoo! So, people talk about too many cooks being a bad thing, But what about not enough cooks? The executive chef, after all, can't also be the sous chef, the saucier, the pâtissier, and other chef roles that I don't know a whole lot about all at once. So too with your Dice Masters scene. A big mistake that some make, and where some local scenes can struggle for reasons that an outside observer might not understand if they are coming into it, it can really cause a scene to implode, is being the only catalyst or organizer, or having only one catalyst or organizer for your group. There are lots of things that make this a problem. What if you move? What if there is a life change, birth, death, illness, and you can't play for an extended period of time? If your scene only has one person who is taking the reins, it isn't enough. Now, a more selfish person than the average Dice Masters fan might say, well, I can't play, so what do I care about these other people? But if you get to a point where you can play again, of course, you're going to want that group to still be there. So even if you're a little more selfish, there's still a great reason to want to make sure that the scene sustains. So, how can we remedy this? There are a few different things that I think are going to be really beneficial in your group, whether you have to take a leave of absence or not. There are things that are going to help empower everybody, and people are going to feel better about coming to play if they're not just coming to play, if they also have a little bit of a thing that's theirs, a domain of their own, or something that they can help with. You might not think that this is true even as you move into working with adults. Certainly I see this working with kids in my roles as an educator. You might not think it's true with adults, but it's absolutely true with adults. Everybody likes to have their little thing that they do, that's their specialty, that's something that they get to help other people with. So lots of things you can do. Some of them you might want to just have like your own vice president of Dice Masters in your area, or some things you might want to spread out. Certainly it's better to have more people aware of things, but you also have to watch to make sure that people don't cause dissension within the group as well. So when you start to look at people who are going to help you run your scene, you just want to make sure that you have the right kind of people that you're choosing. So one big step that you can take is get another volunteer on the WizKids Info Network. It's really easy to do. You just talk to the store's Win account person, whether that's the owner or if one of the staff has the ability to log on in an administrative role. Obvious reasons here, right? They can run the events through the system. They can create the events if you're not going to be there. Different things like that. So that way, if the volunteer has to go out for a while, it's not just the store owner who, frankly, doesn't know the game as well as we are going to. They have plenty of games that they're responsible for. So that way, it wouldn't fall to the store owner to try to run everything all at once. So that's a really broad step, but just having somebody to do that is not going to help your events run smoothly. So another important step is to find another player who is rules inclined. Bring them in on rulings. When there's a question in an event, you might have to interrupt their game, but that's okay. We're talking friendly casual events here. We're not talking WizKids Opens or other things like that. Bring them in on a ruling. Hey, Bob, that's my go-to I don't have a name for this person name. Hey, Bob and Bobina. Bob and Bobina. Hey, Bob, what do you think? How would you rule in this circumstance? Even you can pull them aside and both discuss it together. So that way, if Bob goes the wrong way, you can help him save face. You can talk about it together and then kind of come together united with the ruling. And that's going to be very important, especially if there are people who are rules inclined. They like to look at rules and different things like that, but not as expert as you are with the game as the organizer in the scene. It's important to make sure that they get to save face on rulings, because they're going to need to be confident. They're going to need to be able to deliver rulings. And this is useful just in general, because having more than one person able to deliver a ruling can prevent a conflict of interest. You know, you like to think that we're all friends in the local scene, but if you're playing in the finals of a draft or some other tournament, and there's a rules question, you really want to have somebody else that you can rely on so you're not giving a rules question that could benefit or put you at a disadvantage, one or the other. That's just going to be more fair for everybody involved. So finding another player who can help with the rules is really just very important. With that, make sure that you educate all your players in general, whether they're going to be your rules guru or not. Put up info about judge guidance and all of those other things. Help them understand the fundamentals of the game, because that's going to help them grow as players. Some people are going to feel like the rules don't help them, but other people are going to really thrive in that arena. And you want to make sure that you put as many different opportunities out there for your players to thrive and learn and make connections as you possibly can. It really is about scaffolding ideas, making sure that you build new things up as you go, and having just some of those basic things like here's how the rules are structured, one, in the rule book, and two, in how they're interpreted and how we have to look at them when we're making rulings, is going to help players understand a little bit more about what they can bring to events, what abilities maybe they're reading a little too far into. It also might save somebody from making an assumption and bringing a team that doesn't work and then having a very poor experience when you have to rule the other direction. So while we're talking about all of the players, a really important step, and this is maybe kind of a duh, but make sure you exchange contact info. Have a way of getting in touch. Right now with our scene, we're just using Facebook Messenger. That's fine when there's four of us. We're going to outgrow that fairly quickly. We're going to need other means. We need emails or a Facebook group. Local Facebook groups are very important. We might be able to use something like Slack. The Akron scene that JT and Randy from the Reserve Pool are developing, they use Slack to communicate with one another and generate ideas, and people can ask rules questions and things like that. So you don't just have to save it for the store. Your players maybe forget the question that they had when they get there and whatever else, and you're trying to organize the tournament and it's just a little crazy. It's better to have those means of communication out there. So make sure you have that. Don't just use Win or just use email. Have a means where you can exchange info in a way that everyone can see it. So if somebody has a question, everyone knows what that question is, and it might save them from having to ask the same thing and save you or your other organizers from having to answer the same things over and over again. You also, and this is obvious, need to make sure that your shop is stocked with supplies for the game. Now, as I said, this sounds obvious, but just because you think there is a full gravity feed on the shelf ready to go, or that they might have some more stock in back, doesn't mean that that is true. Plus, you have no idea the turnaround time that some of these orders can take on, especially if something is going to a second printing or other things like that. The turnaround time is sometimes a week, but it might be as much as two, depending on the delivery schedule for your store, the nature of their regular orders with the various suppliers, and things like that. But, you know, it's not just the gravity feeds that you need to make sure are there. You need to make sure there are team sheets, demo sheets that go over a little bit of a breakdown for the game, an info sheet for people to sign up if they're interested in learning more so that you can get in touch with them and help to grow your scene. You need to make sure where others know where those things are. If they're not there, then you're kind of sunk. You're going to be trying to run a tournament, or they will, not you, because you're at home maybe with the flu, and they can't record their teams, or they can't easily record the results because they don't have the team slips there. That shouldn't happen. You need to make sure that it is just a well-oiled machine. Along with that, do others know how Swiss works, or how to determine strength of schedule? Could they run a tournament without a laptop ready to go to input all of the players and everything else in the WizKids Info Network? That's an important skill. It's not too hard, and most players are going to be able to figure it out after a couple of events. Some of your players may also be experienced from other games, but you can't count on that. So make sure that there's another contact person there who can help run the event. Again, this can be the same person all the way through, or it can be a couple of different people. Making sure that it's a couple of different people is never a bad idea, because then you can spread out the responsibilities and make sure that if two of you are down with the flu, the scene can still go on. Now, for all of this, you need to make sure that this is not someone who uses Dice Masters as a secondary game. Not that those people aren't reliable. When we have a lot of those folks around, I've met them, and they love Dice Masters. They just also love other things and put a lot of time or money or energy or effort into those games. You need somebody who really cares about the game, One, because they're going to care a little bit more about the scene continuing. For somebody that Dice Masters takes on a secondary role to, they don't need the scene as much as somebody who feels that Dice Masters is their primary gaming outlet, especially, or at least a primary CCG outlet for them. So make sure that these are players who have as vested an interest as you do in the scene that you're building and developing. Now, sometimes players say, hey, I also play a lot of Magic, and then they say, oh, you know what, this is better. And they stick with it, and hey, more power to them, and that's fine, and they certainly would be a viable choice. You just want to make sure, again, that the level of investment is there, not in terms of money, but in terms of mental real estate that they're spending on the game. For a scene to sustain itself, it takes a good core group of players who really enjoy playing the game and want to come together and play it. Once you have that, more people are going to see it being played, they're going to want to learn, all of those different things. So just keep up the consistency within your core group, and not just consistency in terms of mindset, but also consistency, make sure that you're there each week, at least enough of you. Make sure that those tournaments are firing regularly, and keep your store owner involved. I can't emphasize that last one enough. If your store owner is out of the loop, and you're just scheduling things, then you're going to be in for a bad time. They're not going to know what product you need when. They might not have ordered the organized play kits. There might have been a delay on something, or they might get something in earlier than you thought, and now more product is sold through than you thought, and you don't have enough for draft. All of those things are unfortunate, and they're also avoidable. So maintaining a good relationship with your store is fantastic. For the store that I'm working on right now, I have the email address for the owner. We've emailed back and forth a couple of times already. And he also told me which staff person to talk to in the store if we need to order product or other things like that. I've already been on the phone making sure that we get another gravity feed of Green Arrow Flash in so that we can draft it soon. And we were also able to work out some things for some amazing Spider-Man product that he has on the shelf that just hasn't moved like the other sets, and he's willing to do a discount draft for us on that. So when you talk to your store owner and they see that you're excited, they're going to be excited too. One, it's business for them. They want to see gamers coming into their shop and spending money. That's an obvious, obvious thing. But most game store owners are also gamers themselves. They love the hobby. Sometimes they don't have as much time for it because they are running a store. Some of them have jobs on top of running a store. The gentleman that I'm working with has a very high-level professional job at a firm. And this is kind of running the store as his hobby. He wants to see gaming grow in the area. Obviously, he has a vested interest in it, but he also just has a vested interest in gaming in general. So make sure that those other players are out there, the players who are rules inclined, who understand how to structure and run tournaments, and ideally somebody that you can get in on the WizKids, I almost said event system, the WizKids Info Network. If you do those things and take those steps and educate your players on top of just having another alternate person in your scene, you're really going to develop a great playgroup. It's going to be something that if you're ill or have another concern, continues. If you have to go out of the area for a while, it continues. And they're going to be happier players because they're going to understand the game better, understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, where the basis of rulings is, and all of those different things. When you can take away some of the mystery from it, everybody tends to calm down and relax, and they're going to understand it. Even the newer players are going to have a better experience when you can take care of some of these things. So that's going to wrap it up. I told you these episodes are going to be pretty much as long as we need to. I'm looking for something short form because this is a side project. But I do want to keep this conversation going because I think one of the most important things that we can do is act locally. The old phrase, think globally, act locally. I'll probably talk about it a lot. Sure, we want to go to those big events at Origins, but we also want to make sure that those events close to home happen. And those events close to home are going to be the only things that make sure that the big events have enough players. So, please send us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever else you might get your podcasts. It does mean a lot to me. This is purely spreading through word of mouth and links on Facebook and whatever else. So, the only way this is getting out there is through you folks. Perhaps you know somebody in another town or another store across the way or something else that's having trouble getting a scene. Maybe this is going to help kickstart them. I'm not saying that I have all of the ideas. In fact, I need your ideas too. And by sharing, we're going to be able to strengthen one another's groups and make sure that our play of Dice Masters continues for quite some time. The theme music is provided by Mountains for Clouds. You can find them at mountainsforclouds.bandcamp.com. Thank you, gentlemen, for letting us use this music. As always, thank you very much for your time. I know that there are so many ways that you could spend it, and I greatly appreciate that you spend it with me. Have a great one. I'll see you again soon, and keep on rolling.